Hi, everybody. This is Sharon Odom from CosmeticSurgeryToday.com, and welcome to the call. Our special guest today is Dr. Rick Bothart, a board-certified plastic surgeon in Tavares, Florida, which is near Orlando and one of my favorite places, Disney World. Hi, Dr. Bothart. How are you?
Good afternoon to you, Sharon. How are you?
I'm great. Well, thank you for joining us today to discuss a common breast augmentation question, and that is, silicone gel versus saline implants. How do I choose? So I guess the first question is, what is the difference between saline and gel implants?
Well, Sharon, the difference is basically in the filler. The implants are identical on the outside. All implants consist of a outside shell with the material that will, you know, fill the implant inside. A saline implant contains basically sterile salt water, and a gel implant contains a somewhat cohesive silicone gel. So the difference is actually in the filler. The outside is identical.
Okay. And which one is more expensive?
The gel implants are significantly more expensive than the saline. Typically, they're about double the cost.
Okay. Why is that? Is it just because gel is more expensive to produce?
I suspect that's the reason. I've never actually asked that question of the manufacturers, but, you know, saline is pretty inexpensive stuff. You know, it's just salt water, so
right.
You can't get much cheaper than that. And there's a whole manufacturing process that goes into producing the gel.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that's part of that whole thing. And also there's been a lot of research over the years to modify the nature of the gel. The gel has changed over the years from a rather runny gel many years ago to what's called a more cohesive gel today, which is not as runny, all the way up to a gel which is not yet available on the market but is called a form-stable gel, where it's even more solid, I would say, than the gel we have today. So some of that research probably translates into further expense for the implants as well.
Okay. Now, I've heard about saline implants leaking. Is that still the case?
Oh, all implants can leak. Even the new gel implants can leak. So anytime you have a thin, thin envelope containing any type of a fluid-like material, even a small, you know, hole in that will cause a leak. So, yes, the implants are still subject to leaks today. We don't have a leak-proof implant yet.
Okay. Now, so given the choice, how does someone actually make the choice between the two? I mean, do gel implants feel more natural?
Some people say they do. A lot of the decision-making is going to be done probably by the surgeon, because the surgeon will obviously have his bias and preferences. Patients are coming in much more well-informed these days than in the past. They go on the Internet and they look up websites, and of course, they talk to friends as well. And so, you know, when they come in your office, usually they aren't coming in cold. They've done some research on implants, and they may have an opinion. A lot depends on the actual circumstances. There are some circumstances in which a saline is much preferable, and others in which a gel may have some advantages. One very, you know, clear place where you have to draw a line is in patients that are less than 22 years of age. Gel implants are not at this point permitted for implantation in patients who are under 22 years of age at the time they have their surgery. So younger patients are going to have to go with the saline unless they want to wait until they're a little bit older. There's a definite feel that the gel implants tend to reproduce the consistency of breast tissue more. The issue really is, you know, not that big of an issue, at least not in my experience, because most of your patients who are good candidates for a breast augmentation will do very well with either one of those two implants. And I would suspect that in most cases, unless you tell a patient what type of implant she has, she would not be able to know by the look or feel of that implant.
So you decide for them?
Sometimes I do. If patients ask me my opinion, I will give them my opinion. And I will always state very clearly that this is, you know, my preference, and they may go to a surgeon who will express a different preference. My preference tends to be for the saline implants in most of my patients. I like the safety aspect of saline implants. It's a little bit, of an advantage over the gel implants.
So is there a safety issue with gels? Are they as safe as saline?
No implant is 100% safe, Sharon. All implants carry, you know, potential for complications and risks and have limitations. Talking specifically about leaks, though, okay, if a saline implant leaks, it's absolutely harmless to the patient. The person's body will absorb that saline solution. It'll be, you know, eliminated from the body by the kidneys, and the implant will simply deflate. They're very, very easy to replace. And so a deflation of a saline implant is a bit of a nuisance, but it's not really a major problem. If a gel implant leaks, one of the problems we have is that oftentimes you don't know because there may be no external change in the look and feel of the breast, at least not for a long, long time. However, when the saline gel gets out into the space around the implant, there are some things that can happen. You can get some stimulation of scar tissue, which may cause the breast to become firm, feeling. You may stimulate the formation of calcium deposits around the breast implant, and these may be seen on the mammogram, and they may create some questions and some issues that may have to be answered. This gel can actually get out into the tissues if it's forcefully expressed from the implant. Let's just say you get into a car accident and your airbag deploys and hits your chest. That can force silicone gel out into the muscle and into other tissues. And there it can create irritation. It can irritate nerves and do some other things that may be unpleasant and undesirable. And silicone is very sticky. Once you get silicone gel outside the shell of the implant into the tissues, it's next to impossible to remove it completely. So there are a few small issues there. Is it a big safety issue? Are women going to get sick because of this? You know, all the data so far indicates that that answer is no. But that's a big difference between the two, is what happens with the material once it leaks out of the shell of the implant.
Okay. Now, you said something I found to be interesting. You said that silicone gel is not allowed in patients under 22. Why is that?
That's a good question. I don't have a specific answer for that. I think it's because the feeling is that, you know, these young women are going to have many, many years ahead of them, you know, if they have implants put in an early age. No implant is expected to be there for a lifetime. And therefore, you know, the more years you have the implants in, the more potential there is for problems related to having those implants. Now, as to why they made the cutoff 22 and not 23 or 25 or some other age, that I don't know.
Okay. Now, I read somewhere that the silicone gel implants require a larger incision than the saline. Why is that?
That's correct. And the reason is that the saline implants, to begin with, they're provided when you remove a saline implant from its packaging, the implant is empty. It has a small valve. You insert a small tube into that valve, and the implant can then be rolled up into a very, very tiny roll, almost like a cigar, and inserted through an incision. The typical incision that I use for a saline implant is less than an inch long. It's barely enough to admit my index finger. And then when that implant's put inside the space for it, you simply use the tubing to fill the implant up. So the implant is filled inside the breast. And the tubing is then simply pulled out, has a self-sealing valve, and you're on your way. With the gel implants, those implants are provided pre-filled. You don't get a tube of silicone gel that you're going to fill the implant with. So they come pre-filled. And, of course, if you can imagine trying to stick an implant in through a tiny, tiny incision that is pre-filled, it can be next to impossible to do. So general rule of thumb is that you're going to require an incision about three times longer for a gel implant than a comparable saline implant.
Wow, so that sounds like reason enough to go with the saline. So why would someone choose the gel?
Again, there's a bias. Some people feel that the gel implants feel more natural. They believe that the breast will look and feel more like a natural breast with a gel implant in there. The leak rate, even though we have issues with the leaks in gel implants, the leak rate for a gel implant is actually a bit less than a saline implant. I think it's just a lot of preference. There are situations. I mean, there are women that have very thin breasts. They have very little breast tissue. They have thin skin. And just about anything you put in them is going to be in some manner seen or felt as being a device in the breast. It's not going to feel look 100% natural. in those patients where, you know, you're more likely to see and feel an implant, there may be an advantage of the gel over the saline implants, because the saline in very thin women sometimes will tend to show a ripple or a wrinkle or a fold, or you may be able to feel a little difference in texture in that breast than what a normal breast would have. So it's not to say that the implants are identical, because they're not. Both can produce wonderful results in patients, but there are some women in which a gel implant may be a little bit more of a good choice for her. And we use a lot of the gels in our reconstructive patients, patients that have had the breast tissue removed and have nothing but skin there now. They seem to do better with the gel implants.
Okay. Now, what about the different styles of implants? I've heard of teardrop shape, smooth, textured. What are all those styles?
The original implants, Sharon, were basically a smooth implant. They were just a very smooth, you know, shiny silicone shell. And over the years, you know, some of the issues with implants have led to the development of some modifications to that implant shell. One of the problems has been the tendency for some women to develop firmness of their breasts. This is caused by the scar tissue that naturally forms around the implant contracting and squeezing the implant, making the breast feel hard. And one of the changes that was made to the outer shell was to take that smooth shell and convert it to what we call a textured or a fuzzy shell. If you ever look at one, you'll see the surface is kind of a fuzzy surface. The idea behind that is that it tends to modify how the scar forms, and therefore patients don't tend to get have the tendency to get firm. Unfortunately, those textured implants have certain problems. They tend to be stiff. They're more likely to be felt, more likely to show ripples, and they have a much higher leak rate than the smooth implants do. And so, you know, the shell implants really the textured shells really haven't been shown to be as effective in doing what they were supposed to do. The other issue was some women tend to have a rounded look to their breasts. And, of course, a breast, if you look at a natural breast, is not a totally round breast or a round shape. There's more like a pear shape to the breast. The breast is a bit wider over the lower half than over the upper half. And so a implant was designed to mimic that. They're called anatomically shaped or teardrop shaped. The problem with them is that if you put a smooth one in, they tend to have potential to spin and flip, and because they're a shaped implant, they can alter the shape of the breast and make it look a little bit odd. So to avoid this, they would, you know, make these teardrop-shaped implants textured, because they felt the texturing would hold the implant in place. Then you have all the problems with the texturing because of the potential for leaks and things like that. So there's been all these modifications to implants, but in the USA today, about 85% of breast implants that are put in are round, smooth implants, because they have the fewest problems, they have the lowest rate of leakage, they happen to be the least expensive, so that's a big plus, and they just work the best. What's interesting is this, is that when they've done some studies, they've taken women that had implants in and done some x-rays on them and had the x-rays done in a sitting position and in a laying down position, and they find that when women lay down, the round implants tend to flatten a little bit on the chest the way a breast would. And then when they sit up, the implants tend to naturally assume a little bit of a teardrop shape because of the effects of gravity. And this is what happens with a natural breast. If you have an implant that has a shape actually built into it, so the teardrop shape is there all the time because it's built in, then you're not going to see those natural changes. So you know, the long and short is this, that there may be some very unusual circumstances where the choice of a teardrop or a textured implant or both may be an advantage. But for the vast majority of women, the round, smooth implants seem to work the best.
And how long do they last? I mean, they don't last forever, I know. So how long do they last, and which one is likely to last the longest?
They can last forever. Of course, you know, if you have your implants put in when you're 21 years old, your chance of it lasting, you know, forever, that is your lifetime, is less than if you haven't put in when you're 35 or 40 years old, for obvious reasons.
Right.
There's no implant that's intended to be there lifelong, because so many things can happen over the course of 20 or 30 years. I tell my patients, as long as their breasts look good and they feel well and they're happy with them, there is no reason to disturb those implants. There's a misconception by some patients that implants have to be replaced every 10 or 15 years. And that's incorrect. There is no expiration date on breast implants. But, you know, women need to know when they put these implants in. The way I word it is that there is a very high likelihood that sometime later in life they're going to be looking at least one more operation on their breast because of these implants. It may be to replace them if they have a leak or a failure of the implant. It may be to exchange them. They may want to be a little bigger as they get older. They may want to be smaller. 10, 15, 20 years from now, we could have a better implant out there than we have today. And other things can happen to the breast that may lead to some surgery. So women have the implants in at a relatively young age, and you know that their chances are very high that they're going to have at least one more operation later in life for one of those reasons.
And do they come with a lifetime warranty?
They absolutely do. I think the warranty on implants is really an excellent one. The two major manufacturers of implants in the USA today are Mentor and Allergan. Very, very reputable companies. They've been there for, you know, goodness, I think over 30 years apiece. They both have what they call a lifetime replacement warranty. If you have an implant put in by the appropriate doctor, board-certified plastic surgeon, and the implant is handled in the correct fashion, then that implant is warranted for life from failure, which is to say that, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now, if that implant fails, that is, leaks, they will provide you with two new breast implants at no cost. Now, for 10 years, what they will do is they actually have a situation where they will pay a surgeon to replace those implants for you. They provide a stipend of up to $2,400 to cover the costs of removing your leaky implant and the other implant. This is both implants now, even if only one leaks. They will pay the surgeon. So in most cases, the patient will have no out-of-pocket expense for replacing a leaky or failed implant for the first 10 years. After 10 years, they'll be paying for the surgery, but they're not going to have to pay for the implants.
Great. Now, what about these new gummy bear implants I've been hearing about? What are those?
These are what they call form-stable implants. This is the next phase, I guess, implants 3.0. The first implants were runny gel. The second set of implants were less runny, what we call a cohesive gel. And the third ones are gels that don't run at all. I mean, these are implants that you can literally cut the implant in half, and the two halves will just sit there. The gel will not run out. That's where the term gummy bear came from. And the idea behind these, of course, is to eliminate the leak issue altogether from breast implants. They're not yet available in the U.S. market other than through some centers where they're doing the studies to, you know, obtain FDA approval to begin marketing these. I haven't really heard from, you know, by literature and colleagues as to when they expect these to be available on the market. But, you know, like anything else new, you know, only time will tell whether the benefits of the gummy bear implants will actually be substantial enough to warrant that, you know, we start switching over to those.
Okay, so for all the people that come to the site looking for gummy bear implants, they're not available in the U.S. yet?
Not yet. Not yet. They can call some of the, I'm not even sure which medical centers I would point someone to, but if they call some of the major university medical centers, places like, Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, maybe even places like Shands up in Gainesville, Florida, or Miami, Florida, University of Miami, those places, they may find programs where the gummy bear implants are available as an investigational tool, and then they would have to, of course, you know, apply and qualify to have those put in. It's probably a bit more involved than what most women are going to want to do for something. Of course, everybody wants the latest and best. Unfortunately, the latest and best isn't always the latest and best when you use it for a while. Time will tell whether they're really a good implant or not.
Great. Now, I'm sure you have some great patient stories to tell. Are there any that you'd like to share with us that someone has, experienced, you know, with the saline and versus silicone?
I can think of a couple. With respect to the whole saline versus gel situation, one patient comes to mind immediately, a young lady that I saw many, many years ago. I've been in practice now for 22 years, and this was one of my early patients. And back when I had just newly entered practice, it was about the same time that the moratorium on gel implants went into effect, and you could not put gel implants in patients for breast augmentation for over 10 years. So all patients received saline. Back then, this young lady, you know, received a saline implant for her breast augmentation and was very happy and had a wonderful result. And then I think about 15 years or more went by. And during the course of those years, of course, you know, she got a bit older. She had a couple of children. Her breasts underwent some pretty substantial changes. And she came back in to see me. And at that point, she had a lot less breast tissue than she'd had many years earlier. The skin was thinner because of being stretched out from her pregnancies. And now the result that looked so great then, you could see rippling and you could see the implant very clearly. And the result aesthetically wasn't really, you know, as good as she or I would like it to be. So in her situation, she switched, she changed over through the years from being a great candidate for saline to a better candidate for the gel. So that's exactly what we did. We took her back to surgery and we removed her saline implants and replaced them with a pair of gels, did a little bit of cleanup work inside the breast because of some scar tissue that was there. And she got a very nice result. And now she's, you know, she's back to enjoying the results of the surgery and very pleased. So that's a situation where someone originally started with a good candidate for saline, and in fact, under the circumstances, we couldn't even offer her the gel implant at the time, and then over the years became a better candidate for the gel. So there are situations where one or the other may you know, benefit a patient.
That's a really good story because it shows someone who used both. So let's just sort of summarize. If someone is still saying to themselves, well, how do I know which implant is best for me? Can you sort of summarize when you should choose saline versus gel?
Well, let's see here. Let me see if I can put this into some kind of a reasonably logical thing here. In a patient who is young and has, you know, good, fairly firm skin, has fairly good quality breast tissue, is on a budget, so she is looking to not spend more than she needs to, would like to avoid an extensive, you know, more extensive scar, I should say, not, you know, you're going to have a scar either way, and is not looking for really big breasts, I think saline is an ideal choice. I think she'll never regret making that decision for saline implants. Another patient may be a bit older. The expense of the gel implants may not be an obstacle to her. She may have thin, you know, relatively little breast tissue and thinner skin by virtue of having had children and nursed and so forth. And she can accept a little bit bigger scar, and she wants a little bit larger breast, maybe in the D double D range, cup range, then that individual might be best off to consider putting in some gels.
Excellent. Okay. And if they're still unsure, then they can talk to their doctor and or go online and do more research, right?
Well, nothing would ever supplant the face-to-face discussion with a plastic surgeon. You know, that's the only way you're really going to know what's the best implant for you and what would suit you best and so forth is to really have someone that hears, you know, what you want, can take that information, can tell you what the options available to you are, and then can present you with a proposal that you can either accept or not. But I think that face-to-face meeting is so critical. You just can't, even a good informative, I think, conversation like this can be really taken only in general terms, and you have to be careful not to necessarily apply that to every patient specifically without, you know, a face-to-face consultation.
Great. Well, thank you. This has been very informative. I hope that our listeners have gotten good use out of it. I know I've learned a few things. That, for instance, I thought that they always had to be replaced, and I found out that that's not the case. So thank you very much, Dr. Bothart, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us. And would you like to tell our listeners more how to get in touch with you or where about your website?
Well, our practice is in Tavares, Florida, which is right smack in the middle of the state of Florida. We do have a website, as so many practices do. The website is Bothart and Marzek. Marzek is M-A-R-Z-E-K. That is Dr. Marzek, my partner. So it's the word and, Bothart and Marzek, at, .com, www.bothartandmarzek.com. I was about to give an email address, but.
Right, right, okay. All right, well, thank you very much, and I appreciate your time.
My pleasure.